Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day out there. A little cold this morning. We got a lot of phone calls in the first hour. You're welcome to call again. We are joined with Jack Spillane from the New Bedford Light. Good morning, Jack. How you doing, my friend?
Good morning. I'm having a little bit of difficulty with my microphones here, but I'm fine. I can hear you.
We have terrible
right next to me.
Yes, you can hear me. And people, everybody out there can hear you, Jack. We are welcome to your phone calls at 508-996-0500. Jack has a column up. He has a lot of them up there now at New Bedford Light, newbedfordlight.org, but his latest column is on the election. Jack, what did you think of the election results?
Well, you know, the great thing about elections and the great thing about reporting is no matter how long you live, things never cease to surprise you.
Right.
And I think I was surprised. If you had talked to me in early September about how this election would go, I would never have predicted the final results a number of ways. But that's why they have to vote.
Right.
And, you know, we were talking off air ahead of time, and one of the things that I have learned over the years, and it took me a while to learn it, but there's no substitute for being on the street in terms of reporting. And, you know, I always make an effort to get out there, you know, in the weeks leading up to the election, and especially on election day,
right,
when you can talk to people, because what is going on in the media is not always the same as what's going on in the street.
Sure.
And I had a sense, we'll take Scott Pemberton, who I talked to first. I had a sense, you know, that Scott was going door to door. He had said that. He had not been doing a whole lot of issues campaigning. He has his feelings about the issues. But he, similar to James Roy, decided that's not where the campaign was going to be won.
Right, right.
And he was right. So he was, you know, doing the door to door, did every regular voter, and by regular voter, I mean people who vote most of the time. Those are the people that you want to concentrate on, because people who only vote in presidential elections, you may spend some time on them, but they're likely not to come out.
They don't care. Why bother them?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of effort for not much payoff.
Right.
And so he had gone to every regular voter twice. And then on election day, he had the balloons. And when I heard about the balloons, and he showed me the photos of the balloons,
right,
I put it up in my column. These beautiful, expensive balloons.
Yes.
With gas in them.
Yes.
Tied to sandbags. His mother and sisters must have done the tying.
Someone must have filled those sandbags.
Yeah. And
probably a woman.
With little... well, I always say that because his mother was out there with the poles.
Yeah.
Helping him. And
probably an Irish girl.
And little cards that said, vote for Scott Pemberton today.
Right.
Put them on the porches, put them on the driveways, mostly the driveways, I think. And people came out to that Tuesday morning.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I come out in a nice balloon. You know, you got kids.
Yes.
Yeah, they're all excited. You look at that, just quote Scott Pemberton and say, yeah, I'm going to do it. It's not about, you know, I really agree with him on housing, or I really agree with him on crime, or I really agree with him on taxes, whatever. Those are all important issues. And Scott's going
to
have positions on those issues.
Has
but to. First of all, he has a very nice demeanor about him.
Yes.
He may be not always the most articulate. I don't mean any offense by that. But people do not always vote for who they think is the smartest person in a race. They themselves don't think that they're the smartest person in the city. They want someone that they can have confidence.
It's like they had a rocket scientist there to begin with. Yeah. I mean, Maria Giusta,
well,
come on.
A place for smart people, and John Mitchell will tell you that all the time. You know, and I like John Mitchell.
We all like John.
So Scott was working it that way. I was hearing the same things about James Roy.
Me
at
too.
First, I heard, oh, well, it's the Coalition for Social Justice, it's Save Our Schools. Those are groups that are progressive and are associated with them. They did play a role in his campaign in terms of raising money, but they didn't knock on the doors.
No, he did that.
Yeah, he and his wife and his family and his close people. And he did that. And James Roy also has kind of an authentic demeanor about him. And he has a story to tell about, you know, he grew up with not the advantages that a lot of people have.
Right.
A family with a lot of problems. You know, grew up in public housing.
Yes.
Then had some issues with substance abuse. I did not think he was straightforward about it in the beginning, but he got his act together.
Yes.
And then he told the story. And that's a story that a lot of New Bedford residents can identify with.
Yes.
And what I was hearing on election day was people wanted to give him a chance.
I agree.
You know, and you know, if you had predicted that he would come from nowhere to finish second, that he would And it was complicated for why Devin Burns did not get on, I thought was a good candidate.
Good candidate, but his campaign collapsed.
I don't know if it collapsed. He only finished 124 votes behind Naomi Carney. And Devin was working it to the end. I know mm-hmm. he was doing door-to-door. Devin has a full-time busy business.
Yes.
It's a mom-and-pop business.
Yep.
It doesn't run itself.
Right.
And he had to be there every day. You know, I saw this in the Ward 3 campaign a few years ago, where there were a number of good candidates, but Sean Oliver had the time to yes. really go door-to-door during the day because he works nights at the state prison.
Right.
Sean is also a very affable man that you can identify with,
yep.
and whether each position you identify or his overall philosophy, you knew he was going to be someone who would return your calls.
Yes.
That would, you know, be a presence.
He's got a lot of energy.
Which Ward 3 needs. So he did that door-to-door. He had advantages that he could go. Similarly, Ian Abreu has some advantages. Abreu has some personal businesses going, but they probably don't, you know, merit his full-time attention.
Right.
And he has worked the constituent services.
Completely.
You know, and all that. So those sort of things matter to people.
Yes.
I think more than your ideology, more than your position. You know, people are going to say, well, I don't agree with him on this issue or that issue, but I'd rather have him in there than so-and-so because I think that I can rely on them.
Yes.
So that's what I found on Election Day. And the dynamic in the school committee race was also interesting. I had thought Marcus Carwood had some strength because people like a young person.
Yes.
People like someone getting out there, and Marcus has his talk show and all. I think that Von Marie Martins had a that's how she pronounces it, Martins, had a interesting story to tell. One of the few Latino candidates we've seen so far, and a parent, and there aren't, believe it or not, a lot of parents on the school committee.
Right.
And so she had that story to tell. Rick Porter, in the end, I think he probably was glad the mayor endorsed him.
Oh, yeah.
He's an eminently qualified
tremendously qualified guy.
But I think the mayor said this on your show last week. The ballot now, the election office requires you to go with your driver's license unless you ask for a different name on the ballot. So we had Richard Aloysius Porter III, not Rick Porter.
Right.
No, I mean, this is a blue-collar city.
Right.
You see Richard Aloysius Porter III, you see Rick Porter.
Right.
Two different fields. Same thing with Naomi Carney. In the preliminary, she had Naomi Renee Andrews Carney.
Right.
When she'd always run with Naomi R.A. Carney.
Yes.
Now, that's a small thing, but we have a lot of casual voters.
Right.
And I do think that I wish there was more time and more media to pay more attention to races like the school committee.
Sure.
Maybe even get some more candidates for assessor. Not that I don't like Peter Bertheum.
Yeah.
But I think that it really was shoe leather in retail politics.
Jack, I totally agree with you. Going out and meeting people is so important in politics in the city of New York, but in the region as well. And the people that have the time to do it, as you point out, and are willing to do it, right? Because yes. anybody can say in theory.
Some people have the time, but are not willing to do it.
They're not willing to do it.
It's not an easy thing
no.
to cold call door to door.
Right.
Like, you know, it's...
It is, and I think Scott Pemberton unseating an incumbent, we don't often get incumbents bounced. We really don't. It's very
More
difficult.
More often in the ward races.
Oh, yeah, because there's a target.
Well, it's one-on-one also.
Yes, that's what I mean.
It's a binary choice.
Yes. I really think the number of reforms the city could look at. I often think that the way they do the at-large ballot placement is wrong.
Yes.
For everybody, no matter what your political stripe is, what is wrong with a lottery, which I believe is how Boston does it? Put everybody's name in a basket, pick out the names, and that's the ballot placement.
Well, there's that, and there are some cities that have the at-large candidates run citywide,
yep.
but they run against each other.
Yes.
So this year you have these two at-large candidates. You know, so I'm running in this at-large race.
Mm-hmm.
So-and-so is running in that at-large race.
Right.
And so then you end up with a one-on-one choice in the end.
Yes.
I think, you know, I've written about this. The at-large councilors in New Bedford play a role akin to the Senate. You know, that cooling saucer of the
they like to think
impulses
so anyway.
Of the House of Representatives. Well, in a best case scenario.
Right.
So you have people who finish fourth or fifth that could probably not win a one-on-one race.
Definitely.
And they finish third, fourth, or fifth. And there is some value to having those people in because they bring a minority voice. And I don't mean a minority person ethnically.
Right.
I mean a less than majority popular opinion.
Yes.
Onto the governing body. And that's, I think a lot of people would think that's a good thing.
Yes.
To have those voices at the table.
Right.
Because if they're not at the table, that's when the right or the left can go off half-cocked.
Sure,
like, you know,
sure.
And so so I think there's some reforms that might be made to me at the at-large race. I think, you know, I try to understand the value of long-term incumbents. I think there is a role for that, but I think you can also stay too long, and I'll say no more about that.
You certainly can stay too long. You know, you can shop the most popular handguns today, and you should, at Shooting Supply. Listen to this. Sig Sauer pistols now come with three, count it, one, two, three free magazines from Sig. That's up to $150 value on models like the P365 or the P365XL. Shooting Supply in Westport also has great ammunition specials. Listen to this. 500 rounds of 22 long rifle, only $29.99. 500 rounds of 9mm, just $119. And 500 rounds of 45 ACP, just $179. You don't have a Massachusetts gun license? Go to Shooting Supply. Ask about the classes. That's the first stop on becoming a fully civil rights American, right? Getting your gun license. Stop by Shooting Supply right on Route 6 in Westport. Or go to the website, shootingsupply.com. You can reach us at 508-996-0500. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day?
You know what I need every single day of my life is the Profile Tavern in East Freetown. I love the food at the Profile Tavern. You will, too, if you go there. It's located right off Route 140, plenty of parking. Don't have to worry about getting a ticket when you're in Freetown. They don't do that there. So you can stay as long as you want. The bartenders are great. The drinks are great. The beer mugs are already frosted and waiting for you. Make a plan to go to the Profile Tavern either for lunch today or over the weekend. Profile Tavern, the seafood is great. When I was there the other day with Aaron Burke, I had the tavern tips, steak tips, really great. But I saw Pat Moriarty, who's a seafood professional, there. So you know the seafood is great at the Profile Tavern. If you're there for dinner, make sure you stay for dessert. The dessert is amazing at the Profile Tavern. Check out the menu at profiletavern.com. We have Jack Spillane here in the studio with us. When I play the Beatles, you know Jack's here. I don't always save him just for Jack, but you know Jack's here when I'm playing the Beatles. So, Jack, City Council President, what are you hearing?
So, at first I was hearing Ryan Pereira.
Yes, me too.
Who wants it. I know Sean Oliver late took a run at it last time.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if he might be working it too. Ian, I would not be surprised. I thought he was done with that,
right.
But I think he's talking about it. I think it's going to be difficult this year.
What's that?
Because I think that we have, well, maybe not. I mean, there were some strange allies on the last council. I mean, you had Linda Moore, Maria Jester, and Shane Burgo, who ideologically don't have all that much in common with
right.
each other.
I agree.
But we're very tight
yes.
in terms of the way the council works.
Yes.
And what gets heard, what doesn't get heard.
Right.
You know, who gets what committee, you know, who gets to be council president. And so two of those three are gone, unless Maria manages to find 17 votes, which is just on the edge of the number of votes that could change.
I agree.
Recount. I still find it hard to believe because those voting machines are the best thing that ever came down the pike, in my opinion.
Okay.
I know a lot of people maybe that listen to the station don't like the voting machines, but these are not the old electronic voting machines that you had in places like Fairhaven.
Right.
When I first came down here, I was living in Fairhaven. These voting machines are written ballots, so you fill them out with a pen,
right?
You know, and then the laser just reads that pen. So they're just phenomenally accurate. Like, you know, sometimes they jam, and they jam everywhere, as the mayor said last week on this program.
Right.
That can be a little bit annoying if you're next in line.
Sure.
But there really have not been any, these laser tech reading, it's a written ballot, so you have that written ballot if you need it, unlike the old electronic machines that were used, and maybe still used in some places. But I just think I have not seen anything other than a one or two vote difference,
right?
Overturned.
I agree with you. We have Jack Splane from New Bedford Light, newbedfordlight.org. You can check out his columns there. He had a column, I guess, 2 weeks ago now on the elections and the election ballot instructions that you should read. And he's got another column up there about the recent election. Jack, we got some people on hold here who want to speak with you. Good morning. Thank you for holding.
¿Qué pasa, amigo?
Hey, Carlos Felix. How are you?
Hey, Carlos.
How's it going?
Good.
I'm curious. Where was Mr. Burgo during this whole press conference with, you know, when they were exposing the fact that allegedly someone was getting extorted for money? I just don't know why Shane Burgo wasn't present. He tends to be the guy that wants to be known as the hero when it comes to these situation, so he was nowhere to be seen. I wonder if he was just not invited or if he didn't want to take part in it.
Well, you know, I wonder if, and Jack, you may have more information. Thank you for the question, Carlos. It's a good one. I have more information on this. But it seems to me like James Roy is now the darling of the Coalition for Social Justice, and maybe Shane isn't so much.
I think they're both probably going to be okay. Supported by the Coalition.
Right.
I think Carlos's question is a good one. You'd expect
Totally.
Roy to, not Roy, well, maybe even Roy, because he's the council-elect. you expect Shane to be at something like that. Shane does have a full-time job.
Yes.
You know, he works for the Department of Transitional Assistance.
Yeah.
So, you know, his I mean, there are some counselors, especially if they work for themselves, you know, whoever, an easier time
right.
getting to events during the day. I guess we'll find out when we see what he has to say about it.
Right. Right. 508-996-0 Jack Splane here in the studio, so take your calls. What are the major issues, Jack, that you see on the horizon for this new council in January?
Oh, boy. You know,
do you think they'll ever bring up the recall for the four-year mayor term, put that in as a reform possibly?
The further we get away from it being enacted, the harder it is, I think, to reverse. I think got a couple of problems there. Number one, the councilors who would like to be mayor want to be mayor for 4 years.
I agree with you. Yes, I agree with you.
And so we have two we know who would like to be mayor. I suspect we really have three or four
yes.
who would like to be mayor. And so, you know, I got the criticism that was made early on that it was suppressing the vote in the off-year elections. But this year we had a very good off-year election. And people don't vote in big numbers in local elections, and I've said this before, either in the cities or the surrounding suburbs anymore. But this was a spirited councilor-at-large campaign.
Right.
It could have been a spirited school committee campaign if there were more difference between the candidates on the issues, which there really wasn't much,
right.
and there was more media to cover it. So the first off-year election, I thought was, oh, I wondered, will people come out at all? But this time, I think that at-large race drew two very well-financed, hard-working challengers.
Yes.
And a lot of interest in the community. So, I don't know. I mean, two-year mayor, I'm not the biggest fan of a two-year mayorship. I just think it puts us in politics all the time. I get the argument of it gives you a little more time to make a hard decision. Now, on the other hand, would the mayor have done what he did on Parallel Products, which some people argue is for the good of the financial health of the city. I don't particularly agree with that, but I get it's a legitimate argument.
Yes.
He wouldn't have made that decision in a two-year cycle.
Right, right. We have Jack Spillane here in the studio. That is going to be very interesting to see what comes of it, if anybody in the council, because I agree with you. You're not going to get, you have a number of people in that city council who want to be the mayor, imagine themselves to be the mayor, and want to do it for 4 years.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't they? If you're going to work that hard to be mayor and you want to get something done, that is the advantage of the four-year mayorship, that you can get something done. I mean, I think, you know, the mayor's rebuilding of the waterfront, his unsuccessful attempt to get a second business park, those are the redoing of the state pier, which he was also not completely successful on.
Right.
Although I guess in the end he'll get what he wants. Those are big projects, and there are political angles to them. You know, I think the four-year mayorship is a good thing.
We have Jack Spillane here in the studio. You can read more from Jack, and you should read more from Jack at newbedfordlight.org. Jack, there's still a lot of the election happens, and then there's still a lot of time left in the year. They have big votes coming up on the city council. Do we think Maria will just hang it up and not go back, or do we figure she'll take the paycheck and do the work?
Whatever criticism you want to make of Maria Giesta, I think she sincerely believes in the things that she, you know, stands for. She is sort of a conservative Democrat. She wants to promote progressive programs like the rebuilding of the Capitol Theater, which I know you've had issues with.
You've driven by that building. Look at it.
It's taking a long time. I'll grant you that. Like, you know,
come on. It's the big dig.
It may take longer with the federal grant system drying up under President Trump.
Yes.
So that project, I think, needed to be done. I would not have done it the way what I would have done is, you know, if I was the Ward 2 councilor, which I'll never be because I don't live there, because I'll never run for office. But I think a community center, you have the Boys and Girls Club in the West End.
Right.
You have the Denison Center in the South End. You have the YMCA downtown. You really don't have an after-school, you know, entity like that in the North End. That had a big cavernous theater in it. That's what I think it should have been rebuilt at. And I would have, you know, a progressive guy like myself, I have no objection to government money going into that.
Sure.
You could have used a small part of it. There are apartments going in, which is a natural to it. You could have used a small part of it for the economic development mission that the EDC does, which I think is a good thing. You know, I don't think we can be pure capitalists in the sense that some people... Well, no, I don't think of myself as a socialist.
Right.
When we're competing against places like China and India and Europe that have government-managed economies, to have just a totally free market economy, I think... it just leaves us vulnerable in too many areas.
I would say that you need to select developers that have a history of doing actual developments as opposed to a nonprofit group to give them millions and millions of dollars to try to rehab a property that even the private sector stays away from.
I think
it was ridiculous.
That's a legitimate point. I think even Donald Trump is a managed the economy guy, a government role in
no
managing the economy.
About it.
He's not a pure libertarian guy.
No, not at all.
On that. And I think when you see that all the chips in the world are being made in Taiwan and that China controls all the rare earth minerals, there are some reasons for having the government involved in the economy. So I just think we may have gone too far in one direction. Maybe we have to correct that a little bit. And I also, believe it or not, believe there's a role for tariffs. I'm not sure the way that Donald Trump is doing it is the best method for going about tariffs. But I think there is a role for them when you're competing against behemoths like the European Union and China.
There's a reason there's statues to former presidents here in Massachusetts for the tariffs. There's a statue of McKinley in Western Mass, out in Adams, Mass, because he was so popular with the tariffs. He used to come to New Bedford. He was nearly assassinated in New Bedford.
The founding fathers were big on the tariffs.
Yes.
And that is how they paid off the debt for the Revolutionary War.
That's right. The tariffs are good. They're huge. They're huge. We're going to... Jack, but back on the horizon of the next year's council when it comes in? What other issues do we think they'll be taking up?
Well, I think housing is it continues to be a sleeping giant, and
zoning then.
Yeah, they are redoing the zoning, but they have the council has moved athwart some of it. They the one of the few positions that James Roy took a position on was he was against the council's reversal of the duplexes in the single family residential zones of the far north end. It didn't seem to hurt him in the far north end. Maybe people didn't know about
it. People didn't know.
But there are quite a bit of garden apartments in the far north end. Multifamily dwelling units. This is not Rochester, the far north end.
And so I
think that New Bedford is a dense city. We have a growing population after many years of a declining population. And we have 4,000 units of affordable housing that need. I would rather see them solve that through building and maybe some role of rent stabilization as opposed to more public housing built in the city. I think the city has done more than its share of public housing. And again, you have lots of public housing in the far north end. New Bedford is a complex city. It's not really like almost any place else I've ever worked. So I think housing continues to be number one.
The way the mayor put and his team planning put forward the zoning change was not the right way to do it, in my opinion, politically, because they need to make subtle changes, more specific, scalpel-like changes than just saying we're going to eliminate single-family zoning. Because they gave the council to
but even in the target. Downtown areas, places like the nursing home by Classy Common that they wanted to make, which is a perfect place for multifamily units, they want to waive the parking because it's literally right across from the train station.
Right.
And even that, the neighborhood fought back, and the people who, are desperate for parking, because, the parking is a big issue, and, you're not going to be able to have parking for all these multi-unit
things. And you don't need it.
Well, I think if you live there, there are some sections of New Bedford where there is so little street parking that a better plan
needs to be
done. And I think that the mayor, as usual, did things like he presents a fait accompli plan as opposed to getting more input ahead of time.
Yes.
That's a hard thing to do, to get input ahead of time, because enough is never enough sometimes when you're negotiating with the council. But so I think housing, I think affordability, and I think that, we really need more of a tax base in New Bedford.
Yes.
One of the most underreported stories in the last year, I think, was the fact that no bids were gotten on the attempt to build a second industrial park at the golf course.
Brutal.
I don't know what's going on with that, but Fall River has Fall River has better layout to do that kind of stuff, up where they built the Amazon warehouse and all of that. But we need to define more industrial and commercial development in New Bedford. And
I thought it was a great idea, and I have been stunned at how it didn't blossom.
Yeah, no. It was during the pandemic that they were doing it. Not the best time. Maybe they were a little bit unrealistic in what they wanted. There are some big lots at the New Bedford Business Park that are empty when people have moved up. The people say, "Oh, it's all built out," but there are some people who have moved out where they could do some things. And the waterfront, I'm watching with a lot of excitement because you got the Quinn brothers down there. If wind peters out, which I don't think it will, because I think we're going to need multi sources of alternative energy. But you got a lot of land on that waterfront that we still have to utilize better.
We have Jack Spillane here from New Bedford Light. You can check out his columns at newbedfordlight.org. You should check out his columns at newbedfordlight.org. We'll be right back. Stick around.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
You see the love, the guitar gently weeps. Look at the floor and I see it needs sweeping.
Welcome back to the program. I want to give you some advice here. Step into a craft beer time capsule, Rose Alley Ale House. They have an unwavering commitment to craft beer and delectable buffalo wings, great buffalo wings, that can only be outmatched by their love of the city of New Bedford. Rose Alley Ale House is the number one reason people should visit New Bedford. And after you've crushed a beer or two, savored some bone-in or bone-out wings, or even ripped a shot or two with your pals in the underground Sub Rosa Bar, check out a museum, shop a local retailer, or take a tour of the National Park, or simply admire the beauty of the neighborhood. Come see us at Rose Alley Ale House. They got great bartenders, great atmosphere. It's New Bedford's number one reason to visit the city of New Bedford. It's not just a bar. It's a New Bedford institution here
New
Bedford.
No doubt. The original, one of the big successes in the downtown Lowell
yes.
waterfront.
Yeah. The guys, Jay Lanigan and the rest of the guys who put together Rose Alley, they've kept it authentic, too, yeah. to its roots.
And they were there, and then they followed by Moby Dick.
Yes.
And then followed by, which is doing well, the new, used to, where Pier 1 used to be, New Beige.
Yes, New Beige. But Rose Alley Ale House, the only place, I think, downtown, generally. Now, I guess there's other places. You can see my brother, Neil.
I'm giving ads for the competitors.
Yes, yes.
Why are you doing commercials?
There's no competitors to Rose Alley. Rose Alley is in a class all their own. They really are. People take the ferry over from the islands to come to Rose Alley. I know that to be true. So, Jack, the city of New Bedford, what do we think the mayor is going to... Because, again, I really thought that industrial park, the second industrial park, would be tremendous legacy for him. Is it just there? Is it just dead? Do we know?
No, they're going to rebid it.
They're going to rebid it.
They're taking their time about it for some reason. Probably because the economy, you know, it's so hard for me to tell. Do we have a good economy, a bad economy? Like, you know, you can read it both ways.
Right.
I think they don't want to fail twice.
Yes.
And so they're going to really be careful when they... is it out to rebid already?
You know, I have to check with Sean Oliver. Yeah. I will. Or I'll check with the mayor next week. The thing I think is, and I know because it's happened to everybody, is the electric and the utility rates. If there's something they could do about that, and I don't know what it is, maybe a small nuclear, something like
yeah.
that. Because I've had Keating on, actually with Marcus, Keating was on, Congressman Keating, and he talked about that we got to move to these small nuclear facilities to generate power, because these electric rates, you pay them, Jack, gas rates, they're just outrageous.
Yeah, you're not suggesting that for the golf course parcel, though, because I mean, small nuclear, I'm open to that. I think, you know, we have to do a variety of energy things, and it's clean, or at least doesn't emit carbon, but doesn't employ a lot of people. It's not gonna.
No, but you could bring other people in with a low rate, with the low cost power.
Yeah, maybe you put it as part of the campus
exactly.
or something. I mean, why has Fall River succeeded in developing its industrial land better than New Bedford?
I would say because it's close to Freetown, but New Bedford has that story too. So I really don't know. Yeah. I don't know, Jack.
Well, it is better situated between Providence and Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know what? I've been spending a lot of time or talking with a lot of people from the Rehoboth area, and it's amazing how close they are to Providence. And you wonder if the city of New Bedford couldn't do more by recruiting businesses out of Rhode Island, because we have a much better in business environment here. Like the way Hasbro is going to Boston.
Yeah, I know people in Rhode Island feel very badly about that.
Yeah. Well, the losers usually do, right?
Yeah, I mean, Rhode Island, you know, people talk about Massachusetts being an overwhelmingly... adversely affected by being so democratic.
Mm-hmm.
I think the case is even worse in Rhode Island. I mean, whatever you want to say about Massachusetts government, I think the economy is stronger in Massachusetts than Rhode Island.
Much more diverse.
Yeah. Well, it's a smaller state, but I just think they have some real problems with the economy there.
Jack, what do you think's going to happen with the governor? You've got the governor of Massachusetts. This cocaine thing in her administration. I mean, having a deputy director having cocaine shipped to the Springfield White House, Springfield State House. Is that going to play in November with the Republicans?
No, I don't think so. I am not a fan of Mara Healey.
Did you vote for her? I voted for her.
I did vote for her last time, but I'll never vote for her again. The way she mishandled UMass Dartmouth and the way that she's mishandled the entire higher education system just to keep in tight, you know, resources with Marty Meehan, who is just like the worst choice for a university president that you could imagine, just has totally politicized that system. The administrators, I'd like someone to do, maybe that's something from the New Bedford Light to do, a study of the administrators at UMass Dartmouth and how many there are and where they come from, their backgrounds, because they have these monuments on the walkway in the campus to the past chancellors, and it's never really been that successful a school. There was a great business school there, a good nursing school.
Yes.
But there was a good art school. So I'm not a fan of Governor Healey, and beyond just UMass Dartmouth, just the way she handled the issue with as large numbers of immigrants began coming in,
right.
And it was clear that you could not handle them in the right to shelter approach. She eventually addressed it, but she didn't address it quickly enough.
Right.
You know, I do not want to position myself as anti-immigrant in any way, because I think we need the labor and we've never made it easy for them to come in.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they're coming in without papers is because they can't come in with papers because the quotas are too low for Central America. And you know, clearly the employers from New Bedford to Chicago to Kansas City to California want them.
To New Bedford.
Right.
Certainly even in New Bedford. We got to take a break, Jack. We'll be right back. Stick around.